Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Travel Department. Discover hundreds of unforgettable destinations with expert local guides.
Tweet at Miriam O'Call.
Now, Finn Fury is here in Studio 8 along with a band of really fine musicians. We've got Michael Fleming on drums, Al Quiff on bass, Rowan Healy on electric guitar and backing vocals, and your cousin Connor Fury on the banjo. Morning to you all. Listen, I'm really looking forward to this film. We're going to find out all about you in a moment. But first, you're all going to have to explain the first song you're singing today, Japanese Death Poems. And the song is livelier than the title would suggest.
It's essentially, the title comes from the ancient tradition of death poems. And a friend of mine, Leonard English, a great guy, he gave me a book called Japanese Death Poems. And basically, some of these poems date back, in the haikus date back to like 1200s, and they're amazing. And they are a reflection of a life lived, and these poets and warriors and monks would, upon their deathbed, write a death poem, usually a haiku. And a lot of it would be cherry blossom references because it's Japan. But there's some absolute gorgeous little notes in there that I absolutely love the book. So I just thought that was a really interesting and profound concept, a death poem. And then the song itself sort of more takes the idea of imagining yourself on your own deathbed, and surrounding your deathbed are the ghosts of the dreams you never acted on and the ideas you never pursued. And they arrive at your deathbed, angry and disappointed at you, say, we could have came to life through you, but you never acted on those dreams, and now we all go to the grave together. And the whole idea is how many ghosts will be around your deathbed when your time comes.
Lovely thought. Brilliant. Look, off you go. You're going to perform for us now, Japanese Death Poems.
I've heard, when we die, all our ghosts align. They die by our bedside. They speak, they say, through you we could have lived such a life.
That's actually really beautiful. It's much happier than it sounds. Yeah. Listen, come back over to me, Finn Fury, in chat. People will know your dad well, Finbar Fury of the Furies. So safe to say you grew up in a musical household.
Yeah, very much so. My bedroom in my house was above his music room, and we grew up in Rathfarnham, and just the corner of the top house there in Moyville, and his pavvy room, he called it, was below my bedroom. And, you know, he'd be up in the morning, he'd roll himself a little smoke and get himself a cup of tea, and he'd be working on all sorts of tunes and instruments. And that, I just grew up through that, you know, and there's pictures of me, and Connor would be the same as well, growing up backstage, and pictures of me as an infant in guitar cases and stuff. And yeah, we were just raised amongst it, you know, raised by gypsy musicians, you know. And it was great. Yeah, it's a great upbringing. Yeah, wonderful.
And your mum? Tell me about your mum.
Yeah, incredible woman, incredibly smart woman, great sense of humour, and sharp as a blade. And she's Scottish. She's from Edinburgh. And she's great, good golfer. She blew out her hip recently, so she's not playing too much golf obviously now. And she's recently got a cochlear implant, and her hearing's coming back, which is absolutely amazing. And the jokes obviously spin around the house about me dad's endless stories and music has deafened my poor mother. How dare you, you know? So yeah, Sheila, yeah, a legend.
So would you say, Finn, that your dad's music influenced your taste, or did you actually rebel and go in a completely different direction to be different from him?
I'd say neither. I just sort of, I always loved music because I was brought up in it. I absolutely loved it. And I always loved sports. I was really the sporty one in the family. And, not, you know, sessions. I remember once when I was younger, like I was doing a session and sang like a version of Raglan Road or something. And some elf was like, that's not how you sing that song, you know. And it just, the purest thing with the Irish trad, really, I recoiled from it a bit. You know, I loved listening to all sorts of music. Loved soul, loved blues, loved rap, loved techno, loved everything. And the era I grew up, you know, iPods started coming about when I was in school, and you could have a playlist of all sorts of genres, so it was limitless, you know. And I could listen to James Horner, and the next thing I'm listening to, you know, Biggie Smalls, you know. Yeah. So I just naturally sort of gravitated into music later on. Actually, a friend of mine passed away And my guitar, my dad handed me a guitar and he was like, just, you know, just get down, just play a few chords, you know. I sort of real grips of life, you know. A friend of mine, he committed suicide, and me and a couple of my friends found him. And it was a real profound moment of like, well, what's life about? What do you want from life? And what are you going to get from it? We only have one spin on this rock. So I look around and see my dad's life, and I just, it's just a great life. But I was going down the physio route and the strength conditioning route and stuff, and worked in that industry for 10 years and loved it. And when I was with my missus in Canada, Jess, I was kind of doing a few open mics and kind of writing a few songs and just having a bit of fun. But the main thing that struck with me was writing a song, and just the catharsis I felt from it was very profound. So I started doing, as I said, a few open mics and a few little gigs, and loved it, and was going back doing the physio on the Monday. And then I was moved to Toronto then, I was in BC first, and same thing, started to do a bit more music, bit of recording. And then when I came back to Ireland, I was like, oh, let's give it a bit of a go. Still working in the gyms, and started releasing a bit of music and started to gain a bit of traction and started doing a few more gigs. And we done like we done Whelan's, we done the Grand Social, and they were, you know, they were doing really well. And a woman called Alison Quigley, she's an amazing singer, she opened for me, but she's been gigging around town for 10 years. She's amazing. She's like, look, there's loads of agents here we can put you into contact with. And I've been gigging for the last kind of year and a half, 2 years now, loving it. I'm doing everything from, you know, weddings, funerals, bar mitzvahs, divorce parties, with residencies all around town, like the likes of the Patriot Inn and Inchicore and Donny Nesbitt's, Devitt's, Porter's Bar and Paddy O'Carney's, all these places. So we're gigging. Myself and Connor are doing a lot. I'm doing a bit with a few different fiddle players as well. And yeah, just loving it. Absolutely loving it. Just fully immersed. And it's great.
You never stop working. I mean, you mentioned there, you know, festivals, pubs, weddings. You play everywhere, don't you? But you're lucky.
Yeah.
You have a beautiful voice.
Oh, well, I've definitely been called worse, so thank you.
Yeah, no, but that's
thank
a
you.
Real gift.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never really like sang, I suppose, until I, as I said, moved to Canada and just started to, you know, I guess as cliche as it sounds, find your voice, as it were, you know. A lot of blues, soul influence would really kind of lean into that. But yeah.
And the Canadian influence, like your fabulous wife, Jessie, is here.
She's
today.
Amazing. Yeah, she's incredible.
And you're going to be having your first child in July.
July, yeah. Yeah, a girl.
A girl. Yeah, are you excited?
I can't wait. Yeah, it's going to be great. Yeah, it's a perfect time too. With I have days off. I've just worked nights. And Jess owns her own shop. She's one of the first zero waste grocery stores to open in Ireland, called The Good Neighbour in Rathmines. Check it out. Little plug there for Jess. She's holding her mouth here trying not to giggle. And no, she's amazing. She's so inspiring in her work ethic as well. And same with the lads, like Rowan and Al here, they're such hard workers. And Connor, you know, and Michael, like all the lads I'm surrounded with, I've got a great network of musicians, a great work network of people who I'm surrounded with. And I think that's so important, you know, for inspiration, yeah.
But watching you today, even as a group over, you get on great. You laugh a lot. Like you doesn't seem like work.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's the whole essence of what I was saying earlier. You know, you've got one life, and it's obviously it's easier said than done. But if you can try and work your life around, you know, if you can create an architecture around your life of something that you really love, you know, living the dream.
And without obviously going into it, you mentioned earlier that a friend of yours had taken his own life. Do you think that changed your attitude to life and the way you talk there about grabbing the moment, living your only life? Do you think that experience changed your own view of the world?
Yeah, massively, massively. Yeah, 100%. A few friends and a few friends of friends who we grew up with passed away very young, you know. So I was, and then family members as well, and I was introduced to death very early and quite extreme too. So I always had that in the back of my mind, really. Yeah, absolutely. And I was fortunate enough to grow up around, I remember I've said this a few times in a few different interviews, but it's one of the kind of pinnacle moments where me as a really young, not quite a toddler, but probably about 4 years, one of my earliest memories, we were at a festival and my dad is orchestrating this mad sing-along. You know, it's a full-on festival and I'm a tiny infant looking at these gargantuan farming men, you know, arm in arm, head rolled back, tears rolling down their face, laughing, crying and singing to the whatever the song it is. They're singing Greenfields or whatever, and just being like, realizing what occupation is and looking at barmen and looking at this, that, and being like, wow, that's, I get it. Cool, you know? Yeah. Yeah, in a sense.
Yeah. Now, how is your dad, by the way? The last time he was in here with me, he didn't have a mobile phone. Did he ever get one?
No, he never had one. So, yeah, no, he's never had a phone. And he barely has a bank. He doesn't have it's all in my ma's name. And he's never had a phone. He hates them. Not quite the words he used, a bit more of it, but he goes, the thing never stops ringing, you know? And we're like, well, that's about, I remember we were in Newfoundland or somewhere, and people were trying to get a hold of me, hopped the thing, I had a few whiskeys, hopped the thing off the wall. And he's like, oh, he had the thing for a week, some Nokia 3210, you know? No, not for him. He's old school. He'll meet you at a time and a place, and he'll be there 15 minutes early, and he'll have a drink waiting for you on the counter, and you'll be there
That's great, Finn. Well, look, you're going to sing for us again, and listeners can find out all about your upcoming gigs on your website, finnfurymusic.com. That's one N, finnfurymusic.com, and on Instagram at Finn Fury. Finn Fury and all the band, thanks so much for coming in this morning. This is your new single, Dogs of War.
What does it mean to draw a line in sand? To say it's yours, build walls, then claim the land. What does it mean to rise and fall neath the shadow of God's hand? What does it mean when history repeats the apathy displayed by powers that be, while never-ending waging wars rage on from shore to shore?
And that was Finn Fury's new single, Dogs of War.